Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Melanie C. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, March 8, 2023, and this is a 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study meeting. And today we are reading from the Big Book. You're going to find us in the chapter How It Works on page 66, taking apart paragraph 2 today. And it starts with, if we were to live, and ends with, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. Today's readers are, and support for the 12 steps, JD, 12 traditions, Patty F, the text, Kara L, Betsy H, Sandy K, newcomer greeter, and also grabbing up some sponsor availability contact information. Listen at the end of the meeting for Christina M, and then giving announcements at the top of the hour. You don't want to miss that, so stay to the end. Lois P. The share ID numbers for our recorded archives for yesterday's 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study meeting, Tuesday, March 7th, 2023, is 20026, 20,026. And then this morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study meeting, Wednesday, March 8th, 2023, 20034. 20,034. That's a 7 a.m. meeting this morning. It just happened. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of the 12 steps of recovery to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA SIF tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. And I would like to ask Shay D. to read those 12 steps for us this morning. Good morning, Shay.
Good morning, and thank you so much for your service. Shay D., recovering in California, calling in today from Louisiana. The 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves, and I apologize if there's background noise. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me be of service, and I pass.
Thank you, Shay D. from Louisiana is what you said, right? Okay. I will now ask Patty F. from Massachusetts to please read the 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Good morning, Patty.
Hi, this is Patty F., the 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group but never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Patty F. from Massachusetts. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to remute your phone. To have a quiet meeting and a quiet recording, everyone's phone, except the one speaking, should be muted. And if you would please use the star 1 key function only. And also mention not to use speakerphones as well, because that seems to be a problem. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We're in the chapter, How It Works. We're on page 66 today, and we're going to unpack paragraph 2. And it begins with, if we were to live, we had to be free of anger, and ends with, but for the alcoholic, these things are poison. And I'd like to ask Kara L. to please read that short paragraph today and unpack it with the directions of recovery that she applies to her life today. Thank you. Kara L., star 1, please.
Thought I was unmuted. Okay, good morning. This is Kara L., recovered compulsive overeater from Long Beach, California. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. Good morning. My name is Kara L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Beach, California. I have a star and underline on this paragraph. And every time I'm angry or upset, I say, where's that paragraph? And it's this one, this paragraph right here. Because I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to live to be free of anger, because my natural instinct is to be resentful, is to be controlling, is to be manipulative. And I just love being mad at you. I just love blaming you, and I love being mad at you, and that's where I go to without this program. And I said, you know, they may be the dubious luxury of normal men. Well, I've learned that I am a hopeless compulsive eater, and I'm not normal. I'm not. I like to nurse a grudge. I like to hold you responsible, and I think that I have all the answers. So today, what do I do with that? Because that's my natural inclination. And it got me nowhere. you know, got me to being severely overweight. It got me to being my life unmanageable. It got me to being distant from everybody and closed down and shut down. So today, what do? Well, I have to work these steps, and I have to know that left to myself, my own best ideas, which I always think are the best ideas, may not serve me. What is going to serve me? Well, a power greater than myself. So when I do fall into this natural inclination of blaming and anger and whatnot, I got to dive back into these steps. I got to fall down and say, you know, higher power, I don't know what I'm doing here. You know, I want to be so angry and hurt here, but I don't know how to move forward and I need your help. And how do I do that? Well, I write it out on an inventory. I call another fellow and say, you know, I need to get this out. I pray and ask God to remove that anger and that resentment and to help me move forward, you know. And then I say, you know, how can I be of service to someone else? How can I step away from what I think and what I'm doing and all the eyes to how can I serve? You know, my higher power knows. My higher power is abundant and powerful and full of grace and love for me. And that's what I want to tap into today. So I gotta do all the do's so I can keep that connection open so that when I do want to slip into anger and I do want to slip into resentment, I can breathe, I can say, God, help me, and I can move forward in love, kindness, and compassion. With that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Kara L. from California, for getting us started this morning. It's time to open up the lines for additional comments on paragraph 2, page 66 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you would give me your first name, first letter of your last name, and your state, I can take a lineup, and although we do very much appreciate everyone's experience here, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences as well. So if you shared it all this week already, your time would be tomorrow and after, not today on Wednesday. So I'd like to take a lineup this morning.
Liz A, California.
Liz A. Somebody from Oregon.
Sylvia F in Oregon.
Sylvia F.
Veronica.
And did I hear Amy?
Veronica.
Yes, Amy W. Thank you.
Okay, Veronica. Okay.
Penny L.
No. Penny L. C. Did I hear somebody else on top of Penny there? Jordan L. Okay, let's stop with that lineup. That's good for now. We can mix it up a little bit later. Okay, we're going to start with Liz A. from California, followed by Sylvia F. from Oregon. Good morning, Liz. Your 3 minutes.
Good morning. Liz A., recovered compulsive overeater by the grace of God. Thank you all for service that you do and everyone who's here. When I first read this paragraph, I actually didn't think it applied to me because I didn't think I was an angry person. I just, once in a while, I would have an outburst, but generally I wasn't an angry person. And as I've kept reading this book, I focused on this. I looked up the word grouch, and grouch means a complaint. That's one of the meanings. And I realized, oh my God, I go through my whole day complaining that this isn't working well, this isn't going fast enough, he's not doing this. And I didn't realize that is a form of anger. It was such a wake-up call for me. And what I do today when I find myself complaining is I pause, I breathe, and I bring God in. And then I say to myself, God is running the show, not me. So there's nothing to complain about because everything's exactly the way it's supposed to be. And I actually have a reminder on my phone that every 2 hours it pops up and it says, pause, breathe, bring God in. And it has made such a huge difference in my life. It's completely all the tension in my body just leaves me when I'm in that state. And for me, I just never realized how in denial I was of these emotions that I have. And with that, I think I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Liz A. from California. Next up, Sylvia F. from Oregon, please, followed by Amy W. from California.
Good morning.
Good
Sylvia.
Morning, fellows. This is Sylvia F., recovered. I live in Oregon, but right now I'm currently in California, and so happy to be spending my mornings with all of you. This chapter and this paragraph was so important and is so important to my recovery. And it says, if we were to live, we had to be free of anger. And, you know, we're talking about how free do we want to be? And the paragraphs before that are asking that, is that how do we want to live and how connected do we want to be? But this is what it feels like when it says for alcoholics, these things are poison. I've had a lot of things, interactions happen with people in the past couple of weeks that have been problematic. There's been a fair amount of emotion and tension and things not going according to my script at all. And how this works for me is that when I'm trying to blame someone else, if I'm having conversations with people who aren't in the room, if I am uncomfortable in my body, and I never knew that before I put the food down, is like what is uncomfortable in my body feels like. If all of those things are happening, I have to look at what's going on with me, because I can't fix anyone else. I can only fix me. And so what happens is that we're going to go on to this next part. I have to look for what can I control? What's my part? And that's what I have to look at. And so if someone has gotten angry at me and it's unfair, I can't go back and fix how they feel about me, but I can fix my reaction. I can apologize for what my part was. The reason that this is so important for me is that if I'm living in anger or resentment, and if I'm living in the idea that it is somebody else's fault, I live in shame. I live in anger. I live in discomfort. Literally, it feels terrible to be me. And that's why I was beating myself. That's why I was overeating, is I couldn't stand how it felt to be me. So if I can get straight with God, no matter what it looks like to the outside world, if I can get straight with God and with myself, that's how free I can be. I hope that is helpful to someone new in the program. It's an honor to share here. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Sylvia F. from Oregon. Amy W. from California, you're up. And then Veronica from California will follow you. You're 3 minutes, Amy.
Hi. Good morning, Melanie. Thank you for your service. Hello, everyone. I'm so grateful to be on the line with you this morning. Wow, these three sentences really pack a punch. And what's sticking out to me today is a few things. One, I love how it's written, maybe the dubious luxury of normal men, but really it doesn't serve anyone to walk around angry and to hold anger in their heart. But especially for me, as a compulsive eater, as an addict, it's poison. And so I get to first learn in this program what my poisonous food substances are, what will kill me, and be willing to put those down and surrender. And once those are down and have been down and I'm entirely abstinent, what else is poison? And what it's saying here for me is, well, it's poisonous to walk around with anger and discontent and bitterness and jealousy and envy and in my heart and between my ears. And that's where these beautiful steps come in this practice. And it really is a practice. I practice it daily, and I learn so much daily. And one thing I was thinking about with this anger is we have a neighbor that we're in a dispute with, or there's an issue. And I run around when I work out in the neighborhood and run around, I see her. And I realized when I see her, I wanted to run the other way. I was like, well, this is not very spiritual. Seeing someone and wanting to run the other way doesn't feel very spiritual, Amy. So I did do my work around it and looked at my own part, my own selfishness, my own dishonesty, beliefs I was carrying around that were not true, self-seeking, my own fear, and looked at those all and gave those over, was willing. And now when I see her, I just say hello. You know, it's so much, it's better living. Regardless of who's right, it's not about that for me. It's about what my part is on the planet and what my aim is to live in a loving, tolerant view that I could never do on my own. I mean, there's just no way. So grateful to be here. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Amy W. from California. Next up, Veronica from California, followed by Penny LC. Hey, good morning, Veronica.
Hi, good morning. My name is Veronica, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in California. And thank you so much for your service. I had to chime in on this paragraph. Poison. They may be a dubious luxury for normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. Wow, that's pretty heavy. It's telling me that if I am a compulsive overeater, that my life cannot be, I cannot have anger in my life, that it will cause me poison. And I looked up the word poison because it just means it's more meaningful for me. And it says, a substance that is capable of causing illness or death. Illness. So for me, the poison is the spiritual malady. It causes me spiritual malady. It anger like corrupts my heart. It poisons my mind, you know. And then I'm gonna go about the day through the lenses of anger, and then I'm gonna behave in that manner. Because really, my disease centers in my mind. And it's my thoughts that lead me to how I'm going to live my day, right? So if I have anger in my heart, then that's how I'm going to act accordingly in the day. It may be, you know, might not be so nice to the Starbucks girl or someone on the road, but it's telling me that if I am to be happy, joyous, and free, and living this way of life as a compulsive overeater, I need to get rid of this anger. So I had to do this work and get down to get to know myself, my true self. I'm doing this work so that I can see what triggers me, what makes me feel disconnected from you. Because really, I just want to feel connected to God. This is why I keep doing this work, because I just want to stay align with God's will and feeling the connection of God. And so because I'm a compulsive eater, and by default, like, I'm naturally angry and I want to blame others, like, this is why I'm doing this work, so that I can have a change in the way I think, behave, and feel. And I can only do that by getting down to what causes me so much disturbance. And it says that this is a dubious luxury for normal people. Yeah, there's nothing normal about me. I'm in a different entity. I'm a compulsive eater. I cannot afford anger. The anger will always lead me to, it'll start with bad behavior, and then it'll start to, with the food. So thank you so much for letting me share. Everyone have a good day.
Thank you, Veronica B. from California. Next up will be Penny L.C. from Washington, but I did want to say that you'll find us on page 66 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The chapter is How It Works, and we're unpacking paragraph 2 today If We Were to Live and ends with, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. And in 6 minutes, approximately, the line will be open for additional comments on that paragraph. But in the meantime, I'd like to call on Penny L.C. to share, followed by Jordan L. Hey, Penny.
Good morning, Melanie. Thank you for your service, and good morning to everyone on the line. This is Penny L.C., a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from the state of Washington. And reflecting on this paragraph, yes, well, really, I was never angry because I felt I had to fly below the firing line in my household of, you know, when anger was taken up by other members of the family. So instead, I would look for ways to be helpful and be the good kid. But actually, more likely, I was passive aggressive in some of my behaviors. But it points my inner strife and the buildup would act out with temper tantrums. Well, this would at least give me some attention at some moments, even though it wasn't necessarily positive attention. But, you know, as I was conditioned to know that temper tantrums weren't acceptable, then food was the solution. That was pretty straightforward. At least I could get some solace and comfort from the food. The other emotion that would take over was self-negativity, that I shouldn't feel that way, right? Then, of course, self-pity became my go-to. Oh, man. Whether, you know, that emotional list is very long. Whether, you know, outward anger or not, there were dysfunctional, you know, emotions that were there that I could turn to. And I just needed to learn how to express healthy anger that had boundaries to it, that was reasonable, that was respectful to others. And that's what program has taught me, how to use my voice in a healthy way. And based on, of course, what my higher power would have me be. And in that way, if I were to live, not just live, but live spiritually fit, my higher power was my guide. And that's become ingrained. And, you know, and I had to learn those behaviors in the first place. And so I had to relearn new behaviors, new emotions, new actions to handle those emotions. And that's what program has given me, and I'm grateful. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Penny L.C. from Washington. Next up, before we open up the lines again for 3 minutes, will be Jordan L. from Colorado. Hey, Jordan.
Hey, good morning, Mel. Thank you for moderating for us this morning. my name's Jordan L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado. Met and on a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous this morning. So if we were to live, we had to be free of anger. And I love what's been shared already this morning. You guys are so beautiful. Bunch of big book nerds. I love it. So we had to be free of anger. Like, we do have to be free of anger. I think that if this was being rewritten today, it would probably say we have to find a way to, well, it does say it in the next paragraph. We have to find a way to master it. Being free of it, it is the path to freedom, is not stuffing it down. It's not pretending like it's not there. It's not like glossing over it. We actually have to find a way of mastering it because these emotions come up no matter what. Like it's saying that here. It's not just alcoholics that are angry every once in a while. Like all people get angry. These emotions come for all people. But for us, to drink is to die. And these resentments lead us back to a drink. It told us in the previous paragraph that hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. So we have to find a way to maintain hope so that we have a chance to grow this spiritual experience, which our abstinence depends on, you know? So if we're going to live, we have to be free of anger, and we have to find a way to master these resentments. And I got to tell you, like, this sounds like a tall order at first, right? And it is for the most part. But what I have found is that by practicing this for years and years and years, like, it really works, you know? And, like, how amazing is that? Like, this big book gives us some direction on how to master resentment. Like, it's wild, man. After practicing this for some time, in living this way, you actually, like, develop a design for living that enables you to live better than normal people. Because they kind of settle, you know, it's the dubious luxury of normal men. They kind of settle for the grouch and the brainstorm, you know, and we can't afford to. We have to find a better way. We actually find a better way of living. It's wild. So thank you for letting me share. That's all I got.
Thank you, Jordan L. from Colorado. I would like to invite other folks to comment on that paragraph. It looks like we have space and time for five. And although we do respect everyone's experience here, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might be able to have their voice heard with their experiences as well. Okay, so I'm ready. First name, first initial, last name, date.
Bruce
Catherine.
Did I hear Catherine? I heard Catherine. M from where?
Tom L.
North Carolina.
North Carolina. And I heard Tom L.
Mm-hmm. Bruce
W. Bruce E. And then I heard a Kathleen R.
W.
Oh, Kathleen okay. W. Okay. And then who else did I hear?
Becca R.
Becca R. Okay. Let's go with that. That's the five for now. And I'll open it back up when we seem to have more time. So let's start with Catherine M, then Tom. So you're up for three.
Hey, guys. This is Catherine M from North Carolina. And got to get through some things. I'm pulling up my big girl panties and just need to say a few things. I've been in a hospital with surgery and a terrible accident for like 10 days. And, you know, you want to talk about not showing your anger. And, you know, I've had to go through things like, you know, going 8 hours for food and thinking that I was going to die, or not getting my medication, or, you know, the nurses not come, you know, when I say. And I'm sure I'm not the first person that's been in the hospital and has faced these challenges. But I'll tell you what, I made a decision when I came in here that I absolutely could not afford the anger. And, you know, the paragraph talks about what it does on the inside. You know, it talks about what poison it is. And I am so grateful, you know, that when this crap has gone on, and you know what, should I have gone 8 hours of food? No, but that's not what this is about. It's about how, you know, I have tried to react to it. You know, my sponsor convinced me, and I've heard Harlan say before, I was quite certain that not eating for 8 hours, I was not going to die. But, you know, the interesting thing is when I'm binging my eyeballs out, I never ever thought that maybe that was going to make me die. Just to kind of, you know, close up with this, though, what I ended up doing was when the stuff, whatever it was that was happening and continues to happen that doesn't meet my script, I've really, really just been trying to take deep breaths and bring God in. Bring him in. And I've been bringing him into my heart. And it is amazing how I've been able to practice love and tolerance with all the team. And, you know, I think what's happening is I'm working on a step two and three in here. It's kind of being in the hospital and being helpless in a way is sort of has been a really interesting way for me to bring God in and to get close. And thank you for letting me share. Bye.
Thank you, Catherine M. from North Carolina. Next up would be Tom L. followed by Bruce E.
Good morning, everyone. Tom L. from Southern California. Glad to be here. And as the last two speakers shared, this stuff does work. you know, if you just do the actions. But this paragraph is explaining why you may not want to hang on to this luxurious feeling of judgment and being right. Now, my eating took me into a place where I was retired at a very young age due to medical disability, due to extreme overweight. And I ate all day night, all day and all night. You know, I didn't live by the clock. And I enjoyed my resentments. I had a mechanism. It's the internet, which allowed me to be resentful all day long at anything I wanted to be. It is a resentment machine for me. Radio, talk radio, also delicious, especially with, loaded with carbs and junk food. It gave my life meaning because I was so, I was completely cut off from humanity. I thoroughly enjoyed the luxury of these resentments. Now I'm sober with food, and even married and in the food, and going to work, I would still imbibe these delicious resentments. But when I'm sober with food, it becomes extremely painful. What was enjoyable becomes a nightmare. So that's what this paragraph is saying, is that, if you want to eat or drink or use or whatever you're doing, yeah, you can enjoy these luxuries, but, you're going to stumble onto a miserable end. But if you want to be sober, no one should suffer like that. We have a mechanism. I don't know if it's the only one, but it's a good one. It's that I turn myself into a higher power, and he is he. I'm not a religious person. I use the common frank phrase. It's God's job to handle all injustices. The coolest, I'm not religious, I've never looked it up in the Bible, but the coolest line that I've come across in religion is, "Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord." And I usually think, yeah, fire from the sky, kill them all. But that's not what it's saying. It's that it's not my job anymore, and we have a way out, and it works. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Tom L. from California. Bruce E. from Florida, you're up now, followed by Kathleen W.
Hello. Hi. This is Bruce E. I'm in Florida, recovered food addict. And if we were to live, right? If I were to live, okay, well, let's see. Right now I'm living, because I'm not in the food, I'm recovered. When I'm in the food, I'm dying. That's when I'm dying. So I think this little short thing, five words here, says a whole lot more than just the five words. If I'm to live, man, I'm really to live and not die. I had to be free of anger. Well, that's easier said than done, right? It's something I got to work on all the time. But that when we get into that fourth step prayer, that sick man's prayer, that helps me a lot. And anger, I would just be furious at my brother, and I would just strike out at him with just this horrible, violent, angry streaks. And that led me right into the food, right? A good way to become an addict is start doing that kind of stuff. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. So the grouch, I used to live as a grouch, just being grouchy all the time. That didn't get me anywhere except in the food. Brainstorm would be like blow-ups and that kind of thing. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men. So my wife is not an addict, and she's pretty normal. And I remember a time when my daughter was in the hospital. And a lady, some kind of health care provider, just really, got off on her, And I was just furious. I mean, I didn't say anything, but I was just really upset for a couple of days. My wife got over it in an hour or two. I mean, it wasn't a big deal to her. And it was pointed at her, so this could be the dubious luxury of this normal woman that I live with, fortunately. But the alcoholics, these things are poison. Right. Anger, resentment, fear, judging, that's all poison for me. You know, every time I'm into that, I'm drinking poison. Grouching or brainstorm, every time I'm doing that, I'm drinking poison. I go back into that, and I can go back into that real quick when I feel like somebody wronged me or whatever. I go back into that I'm drinking poison. But thank God for this program. Thank you, and thank you for you. And I pass.
Thank you, Brucey from Florida. Next up, Kathleen W., followed by Becca R. Hey, good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning. I'm Kathleen W. from Illinois. Thank you for your service, moderator, and for all those on the line that are giving service today, and for all those that are sharing their spirit, experience, strength, and help. Oh, boy, does it help me. What wonderful comments. And I really needed to look at this, to read this today. I just love this because it's such guidance and direction, gives such guidance and direction to my life. Because one thing about me is I am of the nervous sort. I come from a place of emotional instability. And in these paragraphs, in these words, in the spirit of these words, I'm learning how to be emotionally stable. I have less drama in my life than I've ever had. I've had more harmony as I work these steps. And I think that too, you know, it talks about anger, but I think I would throw for myself shame into that mix too. Shame is poison, and I think that it's rampant in this world, and you know, and even in the recovery groups, I think a lot of people suffer with shame, and I know that I do though for sure. But I also know I need to feel my anger. You know, like somebody said, we don't push it down, we don't pretend it's not there. I have to look at it, and I have to feel it, because all of my feelings are informing me about myself. The hardest thing for me to do. Coming from a place also of being totally shut down from very young age and disconnected from myself is not to feel my feelings. And so all of these they're difficult for me to even identify them sometimes. But the anger is easy. Anger was allowed in my household like no other emotion. And I didn't know what was behind a lot of the anger. A lot of times it was hurt and things like that. But it does inform me. I need to acknowledge it. When it comes up, I have to do my work. Somebody said she does her work. I have to do my work on my emotions, and it's the hardest work for me. I bring this emotion to God, first of all, and I've learned, too, about the revenge, you know, not to take revenge. It says it in the big book here somewhere, not to take revenge. And even in an argument, even with my husband, I learned to not be vengeful in the smallest even way. But I take it to my higher power, and I do a 10th step on it. And my God, that's where fine. I find the healing. And how grateful I am for this whole thing. It's lovely. Thank you so much for all your comments, and I'll pass with that.
Thank you very much. Kathleen W. from Illinois. Next up, as Becca R. is preparing to unmute to speak on her 3 minutes, I want to let folks know that after that share, probably it'll be 2 minutes to be able to share before we need to close out if you want to get prepared for that 2 minutes. In the meantime, hey, Becca, good morning. Thanks.
Hey,
for
good morning.
Now.
Becca R., recovered compulsive overeater, calling in from Kentucky. I don't know why, but this just really struck me this morning with this thought. And when I would read this, as a person in recovery, I would immediately think of other people who have anger issues, people who road raged or people who had short tempers or would burst out. Like that was my image of anger. And I would think, well, how does this apply to me? Where do I show anger? And I'll tell you, one of the gifts of having a 10-step routine is to look daily, where has that buildup of emotion? Because the big book doesn't tell me that I have to get rid of the just the big anger, just the big things, but it's that little stuff. Just like when I go back to food, it's the food is the last thing to come, and there's this series of events that happened before. Same with anger. I mean, yeah, I've had some really big anger moments, but so many of mine are so sneaky and so small, and I wouldn't even label them as being angry. Often in my nightly review, I'll say, I was annoyed. I was irritated. And we read in the book, you know, it's these little worms of irritation, these worms of annoyances that build up and build up and build up. And so that was what was so poignant to me this morning. I just wanted to share. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Becca. I appreciate that. We do have, it looks like, maybe 2.5 minutes or something for the last share of the day. If you'd like to take that, I'll grab your name and
Polly Q.
That you're calling from. Polly Q. Thanks.
Barb G.
Let's go. Barb, I think Polly came in just before you, so my apologies to that. But here, let's go with 3 minutes, Polly, and see how that goes.
All right. Thank you, moderator, for your
service.
Actually, too. I'm Polly Q in Northern California. And recovered, and by the grace of God and this program. So I wholeheartedly endorse what the previous speaker said about that 10th step. That is my experience as well. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. So anger comes up for me in another way, and I just finished working the 12 steps again on it. It's a deviously dubious process. Anger for me comes from fear. So I can go into this fight or flight reaction. That is an autonomic nervous system. There is no way for me to stop that. So I am so conditioned if there is enough fear that is built up, or if something is, my safety is challenged in some way. I am so hair trigger response to that, that the adrenaline shoots through without me even realizing it. And it's ancient where this came in. You know, the reptile comes out, that reptilian brain, and I am in fight, flight, or fright, or freeze. So I have to be very conscious of that fact prior to it happening. The 10 steps daily keep that level of adrenaline at bay. But when I am scared or terrified of something, I have to realize, wow, now I am in fight, flight, freeze, and I'm going to try to protect myself and others from that reaction. And then I'm going to be compassionate and loving with myself, and I'm going to go to God immediately. So that is another thing to look out for and to ask God for help with. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Polly Q from California, for wrapping up our meeting with that powerful share. Appreciate it very much. And we're going to now transition to the second part of the meeting by closing this recorded portion out by asking Betsy H. to please read from the big book. Our book is meant to be suggestive only on page 164, followed then with a serenity prayer. But hang on, we have about 10 more minutes of great meeting to go after this. Hey, Betsy.
Hi, thank you, Melanie. Betsy H., Recovered Compulsive Reader in California. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.